Let's put a song so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you. Theme Song, yeah!
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today is a returning guest who brought probably the longest movie we've done on the podcast. A movie, not like a stage production. It's Colden Lamb, everyone! Woo!
John, you sly boy, what have you gone and done now?
Oh my god. Of course you'd pick Mrs. Duke as your voice for this episode.
There are those who say that The Happiest Millionaire is the longest and most boring film in the Disney canon. And there are those who wear bibs when they eat, but genuinely speaking, they are not people of influence.
Yes. Yes. Today we're here to talk about the 1967 film, The Happiest Millionaire. The screenplay is by A.J. Carruthers. Music and lyrics are by the Sherman brothers, Richard M. Sherman and Robert B. Sherman. Directed by Norman Tokar, and according to IMDb, clever yet helpless new butler John Lawless manages a Philadelphia household for quirky and joyful millionaire Antony Drexel Biddle. Sorry, I just wanted to get, you know, the Mrs. Biddle's voice on. His unflappable wife, Cordelia, and their spitfire daughter, Cordy. So that is not right by any means.
How do you summarize this film? It's so hard because there's so much going on.
So my question
in the dumbed down version, it's just the life of the Drexel Biddles.
Yes.
Or it could be viewed as the story about Cordy and her sweetheart falling in love. Or is it the story about New York society versus Philadelphia society marriage?
My first question to you is, whose story is this? Is it Antony Drexel Biddle's story? Is it Cordy Drexel Biddle's story? Cordy Biddle's story? Is it John Lawless's story? I don't think it is John Lawless because he's barely in this comparatively to the other ones.
Yeah, I don't think this is John's story, but I do think, like, if we had to label it as whose story is it, it's Anthony's story, because he's the one who gets scolded at the most by his wife, and he's the one who has to learn all the messages and morals of the story.
True. Even though I feel like Cordy, the daughter, has the most screen time, I think.
Yes. But it's about Anthony learning to let go of his daughter, even though he loves her very much. And
so she's the youngest, yes?
Yes, she's the youngest.
Okay, because there's a lot of information that they do not give us, like time.
What happened to the brothers after they sing their song?
Well, I think they rationalized it towards the end when it was right before they did It Won't Be Long Till Christmas, where they're like, the boys are back at college. So they went back to college after they punched out that first suitor who looked like a douchebag.
Yeah, there's so many people. We'll come back to whose story is it, but there's so many people who come in and out of this movie, especially in the first act. There's the brothers. There's that love interest. There's Cordelia's roommate who sings Bayumpa-pum. We never see him again after
the
that.
The horniest roommate in a Disney movie.
Oh no, she's gonna tell that you put rouge on her face. Oh no!
So, okay, before we get really into the movie, you sent me a YouTube video of Leonard Maltin introducing The Happiest Millionaire that you wanted, I guess you wanted to talk about it a little bit more.
Well, it was more if I just wanted to help you out, just to have a prefix of what you were going to be watching before.
I appreciate that, because sometimes I just watch these blindly and all of a sudden it happens to me.
Yeah, and I feel like, especially if you don't know this film or like the context or the history of it, you're like, wow, what a train wreck this film was.
So what I got, so And I asked you what you, because you were like, just watch it. And I went, do you prefer, what do you prefer, before or after? And you said before. So I did watch it before. I watched the movie. And what I got from that little spiel is that this was Walt Disney's last live action film that he was part of before he died.
And his last animated was Jungle Book.
Yes. Because he died during post-production of this movie. I believe I read that in the IMDb trivia. And then also, I got that Leonard Maltin did not like this movie. So I was like, okay, somebody's telling me that it's not their favorite, and I this is swaying my opinion of it, and
But he also said that this was a cult for diehard Disney fans.
true, and that it was supposed, like, because of the length, they were trying to do a roadside attraction?
Roadshow.
No, road show, which is like to do two showings, basically, the afternoon and evening, because
Yeah,
it
and
is.
again, this was during the 60s when movies could be 3 hours. Sound of Music was 3 hours. Star was 3 hours. My Fair Lady was 245.
So this is 2:45 at
This
the
is
end of the day.
250.
2:50. Oh, it is? Oh.
Yeah, it's 250. And you feel every minute of that 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah, I didn't hate this. I think I liked it. I know I was guffawing at points during the movie, because I've never seen this before. I will say that I was you understood I was coming in blindly, and so I'm just confused as to like what the actual story is, but like it was entertaining to say the least. The whole I was laughing my ass off during the whole alligator scene. Cuz I was like, okay, they are the Chekhov's gun of this movie. Something has to happen later. And so when they got frozen and then defrosted and were roaming around the house, I was laughing my ass off when John Lawless was pulling Charlie, or no, George is the name of the
George.
alligator. Pulling George by the tail, because I was like, that's a real alligator. Those are real animals. Like, those actors were potentially in danger unless they had time to like train with the animals and everything.
From what I understand, because Leslie Ann Warren and John Davidson did a podcast about their experience with Happiness Millionaire, and one of the questions was working with the alligators. And apparently, the alligators were well behaved. They had their trainers on the spot. They knew what they were going to do. And there was no problems. No one got hurt, which is great
But
because
it's
you would
all.
expect, someone would have lost an arm or a leg. That would have made it a fun fact trivia thing for this movie, right? But luckily, no one got hurt. And they also said that there was a lot of clever cross-cutting and some of them were not animatronics, but they were, fake alligators. Some were real. It was a mixture of half and half.
Like, I mean, the one that they hold, I think was real. I'm pretty sure was real and alive.
Yeah.
That's more so where I'm like, okay, so not necessarily the accident, but like the comfort level of these people, because you hear alligators and people are like, oh my God, we're gonna die,
And that's what the maid was doing.
and that's what the yes, but these characters had to be okay around them because they treated them like dogs, which was hilarious. But where do you want to start with this, like? You basically run your episode, so we're
Yes, me and Matt Koflick.
Yes.
But before we go on to that, I do want to mention one thing about the alligators that was in my notes. They tried so hard to advertise this movie, and they did a lot of promotional merchandise for this film. One of them was like a kid's story with George the Alligator as in like a cartoon figure, and his side of the story of the Happiest Millionaire. It was an LP, or it was like a storybook,
Shut
which,
up.
oh yes, it's a thing. Go look it up. It's fascinating. So it made me think. I don't know if Walt was trying to do something with George the Alligator because He was currently in development for Walt Disney World. And what is in Florida?
Alligators.
Alligators. So I wonder if this movie had been more successful and would have been another Mary Poppins, would we have been seeing George the alligator as a mascot costume in Walt Disney World? I wonder if that was like some planning behind that. And Walt lived longer.
Well, oh no, he's a crocodile. I was gonna say we got one in Princess and the Frog, but he was a crocodile who played the trumpet, not an alligator. So, different animal entirely, apparently.
But even then, when that came out, they had the
They had.
alligator as a mascot. Now let's here we go. So how did this all come about? Let's start off with that, shall we?
Like the movie itself or the
The story. So this is based on a
a
true
person.
story, a real
Yes.
millionaire who taught jiu-jitsu to Marines during World War I. And the real life Cordelia Drexel Biddle, the daughter that Leslie Ann Warren plays in the film, wrote a book about it. And it became a Broadway play in the 1950s called The Happiest Millionaire. And I believe it starred Walter Cronkite as Anthony. Then Mary Poppins happens. Big success. And also, this was, as we talked about, the age of the roadshow releases when, everyone was trying to recapture the glory of West Side Story and Mary Poppins and My Fair Lady and Sound of Music and tried to create the big next movie musical. And so for Walt, apparently there was this project that was running around the lot that someone wrote a treatment for The Happiest Millionaire, and he said, "That's it, but we'll make it a musical."
Okay, that was gonna be my question because I'm seeing play, but I wasn't sure if it was a play with music
Oh no, it was a
or
straight play.
it was a straight play that they then adapted to the screen and then they're like, oh hey Sherman Brothers, yodelay hee-hoo.
Exactly. Now, it made me think, why this play?
But
Why
also
this play? And I think I have a possible answer. And my reasoning is that maybe Walt wanted to try to marry Mary Poppins. The songs of Mary Poppins, the
choreography of Mary Poppins as
chore, well,
well.
it's by the same choreographer, but the feel of Mary
Choreographers, two
Poppins,
of them as a duo.
excuse me, choreographers, the choreographers of Mary Poppins and the songs of Mary Poppins with something like My Fair Lady, which was also based on a play that took place around the pre-mid World War I era.
Pygmalion, yeah.
Pygmalion, yes. And then with My Fair Lady, they made a musical comedy out of it. And that maybe that's what he was trying to do, is to find a play from the pre-mid World War I era and make a musical comedy of it. Which makes sense because it is there's a little similarity between Happiest Millionaire and My Fair Lady, in which it's about, upper class problems, technically, and
Right.
about society differences. The New York society that's more rigid and has their nose higher to the air, and the Philadelphians that are more normal.
Well,
Unquote.
in Biddle's case, carefree.
Carefree. And then my other theory is why Walt might have picked this is because did he think of himself as Anthony Drexel Biddle, the eccentric millionaire who, maybe Hollywood did not agree with him? Because he was eccentric and he had crazy ideas. Did he see him? Is there something in Anthony Drexel Biddle that Walt saw in himself?
Well, so at the beginning, when John Lawless comes to the house for the first time, I was thinking it was going to be male Mary Poppins. Because, I mean, they had, what's her name?
Ellen.
Ellen,
They had
yes.
Ellen. Not Mrs. Worth. Ellen. They had Ellen.
Ellen. Hermione.
Ellen and Bert meet again.
Hermione Daddley Day, Daddley. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but
Ellen, her name is Ellen.
Ellen. I mean, this woman plays essentially the same part that she did in Mary Poppins, just by herself this time, instead of having a co,
Mrs. Brill, right?
the other the like a partner to work off of. She was by herself, and that didn't happen. So then I'm like, oh, we're following a lot of Cordy, who is played by Leslie Ann Warren. Now, at the beginning, during the credits, they say introducing Leslie Ann Warren. And I was like, when was Cinderella? So this is after Cinderella, but
Then that's what
because.
I'm confused about, is that Cinderella in 110 in the Shade, which she was also in, was before this, but somehow this was her, and even she says this was her big breakout. So I guess Cinderella
This is her first
wasn't big enough for her to be senior.
theatrical film. Cinderella was on TV. You have to
Oh,
remember
yes.
that.
So technically, I think it might have been one of, if not her first film.
Yeah, because Cinderella happened like a few years before this,
63, 64.
something like that. Yeah, but because it was a live television broadcast, it's not a feature film, like going to the big screen or anything like that. So yes, she was around a little bit, but like this is her first or one of her first roles, film roles. And I mean, my God, she did a fabulous job in this.
Oh, I love Leslie Ann Warren. She. Any film or any project she does, she can never do no wrong.
I mean, although she at first I thought she was Natalie Wood when she first is introduced, because she has dark
Yeah,
brown
no, I see
hair.
it. I see it.
And I didn't I know. I think of her more as an adult when she's in Clue, right? Some may think
Yeah.
of her from Victor Victoria with the blonde hair and everything. But seeing her in this so young and with dark hair, it took me a second, but then after a while, I was like, oh, I hear you now. Like I watched this on Prime, and there's that little X-ray option where you can like see the cast list and all that. So every once in a while I'd scroll over and see Leslie Ann Warren, but I'd be like, my brain is not recognizing her as the Leslie Ann Warren of this time. I'm thinking of her obviously later when she's mature, if you
Yes.
will.
Now, you said you saw it on Prime, yes?
Yes.
Okay, because it's
I didn't really realize this was a Disney film until after I rented it. So I was like, well, fuck, I already paid for it. May as well watch
Well, my
it.
question is, did your version have It Won't Be Long Till Christmas?
Yes.
Okay. So, really quick to go off, because Walt passed, and this movie is so long, just like Bedknobs and Broomsticks, they did a lot of eternal cutting for the first theatrical release. And so there were moments that were trimmed a lot. And the ending of the original theatrical release was after, what's the name of John Davison's character? Ange. Ange is taken out of the prison. He grabs Cordy. They sing a reprise of Detroit. And, Geraldine Page is like, he reminds me of his father. And they all walk out of the jail. That's the end of the film.
What?
Yeah. And so that whole last segment of It Won't Be Long Till Christmas and Congratulations, you're joining the Marines was originally cut.
Whoa.
And if you pay really close attention, you'll note that because it was cut and because it was a long time before they fully restored it, the beginning dialogue of that scene
Okay,
before
so
It
it
Won't Be
was
Long Till Christmas
all
was recorded
ADR.
by other actors.
Oh.
If you listen really closely and you hear the audio quality, you're like, oh yeah, that's other actors.
Oh
There are a
no, I
couple of
knew.
scenes in the revised Bedknobs and Broomsticks where you're like, oh, that's clearly someone else's voice, but they lost the audio and they needed to do replacements.
I mean, you could tell that it's ADR. So that's why I knew it was recorded after the fact and everything. But I mean, It Won't Be Long Till Christmas is such a powerful moment for them, because now they're empty nesters.
Yes, and that and It Won't Be Long Till Christmas is sort of the moral song of the story, and that's what also might support that this is Anthony's story, since he's the one who learns about letting go. And also we it could also be supported that Geraldine Page's character also helped along with this moral about showing how if you really don't let go of your kid, you really turn into a snobby monster like Mrs. Duke.
Right. And like you have to realize, like, okay, so they have a weird relationship from what we're given from the movie. I don't know. I didn't look into the real people, so I don't know if any of this is true or not. But from this fictionalized version of it, it seemed like at first that Anthony treated Cordy like one of the boys.
Yes.
Because he trained her to box and everything. But then, towards throughout the movie, I'm seeing that he's treating her as daddy's little girl. And then at the end, it's you are my last child to leave my house. Doesn't matter what gender you are the last child to leave our house. And I'm going to miss you, but now you have to be an adult, which we all kind of experience in a way, hopefully. You know, when kids move out and the parents are all of a sudden, like, that's why I thought it was such a powerful moment, because you don't really see this in film. You don't really see parents just like being, you know, they're like, oh, he notices the squeak in the floor and he notices the clock and everything. Like, now you don't have kids, so you're not distracted, quote unquote. You now have to be like, oh, I have to fill the time. And his boxing cult is not going to help. I can tell you that. Sorry, his boxing church cult is not going to help.
God. You know what I wrote down during that scene during Strengthen the Dwelling of the Lord? This is a straight male Republican version of MAME. And if MAME is the eccentric aunt who does all these crazy things and upsets, the snobs of New York, the same way Anthony Drexel Biddle is eccentric in his own way by doing Bible boxing classes and having alligators. That's it. So it's a straight Republican version of MAME. Have
I actually,
you ever seen MAME?
no, I haven't seen
We'll
it.
have to add that. Open a new window, open a new door. That was Lucille Ball singing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That I figured. I think somebody else already claimed it. Sorry. But
That,
it will.
okay. Well, wait till you watch that. You're gonna see like, oh,
I'm gonna get
this is
understand a
the
lot of
gay version of the
references.
Happiest Millionaire.
Well, I mean, the Happiest Millionaire, it's long, but I don't know. At the same time, I didn't feel the length until the end, towards the end. Like, I didn't really.
You know where I really feel the length? It's when we come back after intermission and we have that scene where Angé is
Where's
having.
intermission?
Did you not have an intermission?
I didn't have
So,
an intermission.
this is why maybe if you want to watch it again, go on the Disney Plus version. So,
Yep.
after the reprise of Fortuosity, and after the reprise of
That makes
Fortuosity,
sense.
there's a break and then the snow falls on the house and we are now having dinner with the Biddles. That's where the Act One, Act Two break was. What happened in your version?
It just kept going.
Oh,
W
did
we
yours have an
had
overture?
we had an overture for the opening credits.
Oh, but there was an overture before the opening credits.
There's an overture before the opening credits?
There's an overture before the opening credits.
I didn't see an overture before the
Well, I
opening
guess you're
credits.
gonna have to go on Disney Plus and watch it again.
Because the opening credits had all the drawings,
Yes, but
which
before.
I
In the
wasn't
Disney Plus
sure.
version, there's an overture by itself, and then we get the opening credits.
So that's why mine was only 245 instead of 250, because they cut
Yes.
out the overture and the intermission.
Not that you're going to miss anything, but that's where the break
I
is. But
missed
anyway,
some great music.
yes. And by the way, I just wanted to show you this. I was at a record store, and here was
Of
one of
course,
the
you got for 35 cents or 25 cents, is that what it says?
25 cents.
You got the record for Happiest Millionaire.
Well, it's one of the records for the Happiest Millionaire. There's a separate one for the soundtrack, but this one was, let's see, it's singers who covered it. It is the Mike Sammes or Sammes Singers,
Okay.
Camtrata. But inside is absolutely gorgeous because it has by themselves the original artwork drawings
Can
of
you
the opening sequence.
send me those?
Yes, I'd be more than happy to send you them.
So, okay. So now that I'm real looking at them, I did make a note during the overture that I saw. Okay, so they are drawings of scenes that will happen in the
Well, they're
movie.
not scenes that happen because there's no polo pony scene. There's no golf. I think, again, which is why my theory is that Walt was trying to do a My Fair Lady was just trying to show upper class society during the beginning of the turn of the century.
Sorry, when you turn the page to see the car, I thought of Aunt
Yeah, but there's
Angie.
also, they show a sequence with, the
A
original
plane.
airplanes, daredevil airplanes. But I think with the main part of those opening drawings was to set up the world of beginning of turn of the century
The
America,
high
1910s.
society.
It's grand to be an Englishman in 1910. King Edward's on the throne. It's the age of, oh, excuse me. I didn't mean to sing What's Wrong With That. Oh, I mean, The Life I Lead. I'm so sorry.
Okay, we're here because I heard other songs throughout this movie.
What did you hear? And I'll tell you mine.
Oh shit, where did I just wrote them down. And I'll always be Irish. In the Spanish portion, it sounded like King of the Forest.
Yes. Okay.
There was
If I
another
went to
whiskey.
Spain and grew a mustache.
Yes, there was another Wizard of Oz moment where I can't remember where I wrote it. Anyway, so We Are Dancing is I Am 16 going on 17, basically. And that is also because the choreographers, Mark Breaux and Dee Dee Wood, not only did Mary Poppins, but they did do The Sound of Music, and they also did Little Abner.
They
Born
did
for
little.
Episode.
Oh, I love their choreo. I thought that was Michael Kidd, but I guess they must have gotten new choreographers for the film.
I think they adapted for the film.
That might have been what it was.
Yeah, they made it so that it worked on the sound stage instead of the theatrical stage.
Even though, oh God, that soundstage for that movie was obnoxious. And you saw, and I'm sure you talked about it, because who did that with you? Was it Broadway by Ghostlight?
It was Mark Benigni and Tommy Schoenfelder.
Mark Benigni, if you're listening to this, love your work. Anyway, but as you
Speaking
remember that
of.
movie that you could still see the top of the sound stages? They didn't cut it out.
I actually reached out to Mark because the sweaters that they wear for his cult, boxing cult, I was like, did you get one of these? And he hasn't responded back. So we'll see. Because
He
he
has a Bible Biddle class sweater.
I'm asking if he got them because he does that. He likes to go on the auctions for these kind of
Yeah.
for these kind of movies and put in bids. So we'll see. We'll see.
Oh my God.
Hopefully by the time this comes out, I get an answer.
And please tell me you heard, let's have a drink on it is basically Step in Time. And they even do the choreography from Step in Time.
I didn't hear Step in Time. I saw Step in Time, and I also saw the barn raising scene from Seven Brides
Yeah. And
within
also,
the choreography, because they use. I was like, wow, these choreographers like their high kicks.
oh yes, that's definitely their calling card. And I think they also did The Slipper and the Rose, and there's a sequence, or there's a little part of Position and Positioning where they do the high kicks on a rail, just like in Poppins.
But oh my God. And then there was, so I think though Detroit was later used in Hunchback for Topsy Turvy.
I Yo,
Once a year, da 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 ba da dum bum 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 bum.
but here's the thing. I don't think Alan Menken knows Sherman's work well enough. You know what I hear when I hear Topsy Turvy?
What do you hear?
Where do wankers gallivant like boys? Why
Yes.
do Vic and what would and Christmas Carol and Hunchback were exactly at the same time.
Y
So
yes.
that makes sense that Fezziwig's annual Christmas ball either was written before or after Topsy Turvy, or vice versa.
So
That I hear.
live, I got a response live, everyone, from Mark already. He just says, ha 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 ha, I wish.
Well then, Mark, strengthen the dwelling in your beds.
Well, so okay. But did the Sherman Brothers borrow music for this, or is it
I don't
just
think they borrowed it. I just think they knew how to. It just comes with the territory. When you have the composers of Mary Poppins writing a Disney movie, with
right.
a British Irish character, something is bound to sound the same.
And there's
It's
only so
also
many combinations one can do with notes to make it that
it's
it
nobody's fault, but
inevitably it's
also they
gonna
have their
sound.
own, like There Are Those is like a good standalone, but then again, it does sound like something we would hear later with Protocolically Correct in Slipper in the Rose, right? And Position and Positioning. It's just there's no way.
Like Valentine Candy sounded totally original. And it was.
Think there's a song they would later use for one and only original Genuine Family Band that Leslie Ann Warren was and John Davison also did right after Happiest Millionaire. That sounds eerily the same. But I'm just saying, who cares? The music's great. It's why I love this movie so much. The soundtrack. It's my favorite. I will put this out on the record. My favorite Sherman Brothers score is The Happiest Millionaire. Number two spot is Slipper in the Rose, very close, but this is my favorite. I love Fortuosity. And I believe it's the only thing from this film that has like had a life of its own. I think there's a Fortuosity store in Disneyland. It's one of the songs that the barbershop quartet singers in Disneyland sing in their repertoire. They don't sing it, as often, but it's in their repertoire.
Interesting.
And then everything else has just slowly faded away.
So first time watching, I can't really hum a lot of the tunes per se, but while watching it, it was enjoyable. It's just interesting that like in the first 20 minutes we get the first four songs, and then I was just like, I'm
It's
waiting.
the first 40 minutes. That first scene is 40 minutes. It's such a long introductory scene. It starts with Fortuosity, and that quote unquote scene does not end till I'll Always Be Irish. And it's not, and Bayum Pum Pum is the
Is
next
the next
scene.
because it's a time jump because she's in college. Is she
But
going to
that whole
college
segment takes place, that whole scene,
in one day?
in one, like, or even like under 2 hours. If we're thinking about it, like in the time, oh, it's
And
such
the
a long introductory scene. And then that first scene, we have Fortuosity, What's Wrong With That, Watch Your Footwork, Valentine Candy, and I'll Always Be Irish.
and strengthen
Five
your dwelling,
and
six.
six, Strengthen the Dwelling.
How
All
dare
six
you
songs
forget that?
in one sequence, one scene.
How dare you forget Strengthen the Dwelling? You've been singing it since we started. Yeah, and then which is the one? I'll Always Be Irish. I love that at the end. Okay, so there's Cordy, the daughter, and Cordelia, the mother. Like they're all d dancing off in Cordelia. Starts the dance. She's like, no, I'm a lady.
Yes, I'm trying to think if there was something similar like that in Mary Poppins, where she's like, "Oh, I want to join the dance." Oh, well, no, I'm a lady.
No, I was gonna say Sister Suffragette, but that's everyone joins in at the end of that one.
But in any case, while we're on the subject of Poppins in this film, I think the problem was. One of the reasons why this film flopped is that everyone called this Mary Poppins, but without the magic, which is unfortunately true. It's like you took all the boring, all the scenes to get to the magic of Mary Poppins in one film, and you just, all Mary's carpet bag tricks, the Jolly Holiday sequence, it's all gone. But I still love this film, but
I
it is
mean,
Mary
they.
Poppins without the magic.
Well, the thing is, though, John Lawless isn't as important as Mary Poppins is in her movie.
Well, I see John Lawless as the Bert character, the eccentric Europeaner who smiles and sings, Chim Chimney or Fortuosity, the weird song, the weird word song.
When he sings Let's Have a Drink on It, I was like, you are a disappointment to all Irish people for not drinking.
He's not even Irish. Tommy Steele, that's the thing, is that Tommy
The
Steele is
character.
British.
The character, I mean, of John
But I
Lawless
think the
is.
reason why they made the character Irish is because they didn't want another Cockney British person to compare to Bert. Because
That's
Tommy Steele
fair.
made his, like, and how Walt found Tommy Steele was Tommy Steele at the time was doing his big success, which is Half a Sixpence, in which he's playing a Cockney, singing music hall songs. And in fact, Let's Have a Drink on It is more in line with Flash Bang Wallop from Half a Sixpence than it is Steppin' Time.
I don't know this other show that you're talking about, so I'm gonna just have to
It is a movie.
agree.
We'll have to put it on the list.
Oh boy, send me the name
Flash
again
Bang
later.
Wallop, what a pretty picture, what a picture, what a photograph. Oh, you'll just listen to that song. You'll get half a sixpence.
I mean, this movie is just, it's fun. I don't know why.
It
Is
is
it
fun,
because,
but if you're a kid, I'd be bored.
well, 'cause it's 3 hours long, right?
It's 3 hours long, and like, why do I care about who Cordy's about the invitations being lost? Why do I care?
Well, I mean, why do I care about that? But I'm still not sure if Anthony did that on purpose.
I think because the wife, doesn't talk to him later in the breakfast scene, and he's throughout this whole movie, the wife just shakes her finger at him, just scolds him. This whole entire there's like four different segments I counted that she scolds the poor Anthony. I think he did do that intentionally because deep down he didn't want this marriage to go through as well as much as Geraldine Page's character.
Well, and is it because he doesn't like Angie? What is that?
Angé. I don't think
Angie.
it's that again. I think it's the same problem that Mrs. I can't remember her name,
Mrs.
Geraldine Page,
Duke.
Mrs. Duke has is that they
They just don't
both
want to give
don't
up their
know how to let
child.
go of their kids. And
Well,
so,
but Mrs. Duke is more of a bitch about it than.
yeah, but that's the thing is that it's a variation on the theme. Yeah, Mrs. Duke shows her disdain for this marriage outwardly. But Anthony does it inwardly and sneakily by hiding the invitations.
Well, but the thing that makes me question if it's on purpose is that after they prove their machismo, basically, and they had their toxic masculinity, fragile male eagle moment of fighting each other, he at least gains some respect for Angers. So I was like, are you doing, I don't know if he actively did it on purpose or if it was subconsciously on purpose, because it seemed like as soon as he learned about the concept of jujitsu, he's like, oh, I must learn this. We can fight and you can teach me. We could teach everyone.
Yes. And the first time watching it, I was confused. I thought it was accidental. And I tried for when I was going to rewatch this for this podcast, I tried to pay attention a lot closer to the dialogue than I have in previous viewings of this film. And I think it was intentional. I think it was
Just
intentional.
because of John Lawless's line about how it was underneath a pile for a donation.
Yeah, pile for donation. And then, because later the wife again scolds him. And so it must have been intentional. Otherwise, there's no reason for the wife to scold him. Otherwise, the wife would have said, "What a terrible accident." And it said, she's like, "Well, congratulations. You just ruined everything, Anthony."
Well, is Cordelia scolding him or is she trying to ground him? Because
I think she's trying, it's, I consider it, I call it scolding. It's more grounding. But
yeah,
it's more
because
about waving the finger like, "Anthony, you need to do this right.
you're being an eccentric millionaire right now. You gotta stop
Stop.
it. You
Gotta stop it. Yeah,
be a
basically.
person dealing with other people's lives here. And also, how did he get his money? Is it just old money and he's.
Yes, because, well, actually, I don't know because in the song, Grandma says, "Though the nouveau riche deny it, all their money cannot buy it, class will out." So it must be that New York, Geraldine Page's character is nouveau riche and that they are old money because
I'm
they
gonna
talk
have to
about.
correct you for a hot second.
Sure.
She's Aunt Mary, not
Oh, Aunt
Grandma.
Mary, sorry. I can't remember these people's names out of all
I'm
the.
looking at the IMDb page, so I have all of my
Yes.
tabs open
Oh,
for this one.
hello, Aunt Mary. This is not a social call.
When, by the way,
Gladys Cooper, that's her name.
when they did There Are Those, I was like, ding, ding, ding. Let's get this lady fight going. This proper
I
lady fight.
conservative, reactionary.
Yes. Where I was like, and I'm like, that's a precursor to the main event from Diana the Musical.
Some people, there's an Instagram social media account called Camporama, and they posted a clip of There Are Those, and the caption was, "If the Gilded Age was a musical, or if Bridgerton was a musical, if this would be the main song."
Bridgerton, I can see Dame Maggie Smith as one of those characters. Just
Yeah.
being like, well, I would never.
But I love how shady it is. It's so much fun to watch. Those two ladies, we'll talk about Sharps, but those two ladies and that song steal the show. They really do. It's so much fun just seeing their reactions and smiling, even though they hate each other to bits. They want to tear each other's eyes out, but they just smile and drink their punch.
So I'm looking up at the real Anthony Drexel Biddle, and it turns out that he was an officer in the Marine Corps, but he joined it at the age of 41, which I guess that's how old he's supposed to be in the movie. Supposed to be 41 years old.
Well,
Different time, I know.
well, it's more of that Frederick McMurphy. Is that his name, Frederick McMurray or Frederick McMurphy? Oh gosh, I'm a horrible human being.
Fred McMurray.
Fred McMurray. He did a lot of films for Mr. Disney, most notably Absent-Minded Professor, and I think he also did Shaggy Dog. And there was a film before this. I think it was something about Life with Father or something like that. But he was Mr. Disney's go-to for a father figure. So, of course, when casting this, he's like, oh, give that to him
See, and there
because,
were moments where I thought that they wanted Jimmy Stewart, but they landed.
Mary, what's wrong with that? I
Well,
don't
there were
understand, Mary.
moments that I was just like, you look like Jimmy Stewart. Like, I don't know if that was the direction that you were given, but you physically look like him. This was a great movie. I'm sorry that it's like lost in the ages, because I think people need to watch this. It's doing things that they didn't do at the time, and they are trying to do these days with Disney, where like it's about like we talked about, it's like the empty nest syndrome. It's, giving autonomy to your children to, grow up and letting them make their own mistakes, or telling them what to do in this case, because at the end he does tell Angers what to do with his life instead of going off to China.
Yeah, I think the only film that would come close to this would probably be the original film version of Father of the Bride, but I haven't seen that film, but I can only suggest that they kind of touch on the empty nest syndrome compared to this one, that the whole film is about the empty nest syndrome.
Right. This one is wild. But I don't know
I
what
wouldn't
to
say as
cut from.
wild as Bedknobs and Broomsticks in regards to like wild Disney musical.
But also, I don't know what should be cut from this if you wanted to like
The scenes.
time down.
Trim the scenes. Trim those scenes. My God, just get to the point. Some of these scenes just drag on and on and on. Especially
Surprisingly,
that.
I was invested.
I love this film, don't get me wrong, but there are some scenes I'm like, okay.
I mean, you can't cut that alligator scene
Do
by
we
any
really need
means.
like a 5-minute scene before by Um Pum Pum? Do
Well,
we really
yeah,
need to know
to
that she
under.
wears rouge and she might snitch? Do we really need to know that, especially if we're never going to see her again? Do
Where
we
are the
really care about the
brothers?
brothers if we're never going to see them again? I mean, don't get me wrong. Watch Your Footwork is a fun song and it introduces Cordy and Anthony's relationship, but. Do we really need to have the brothers? Just cut the brothers completely.
It's yeah. I
Again, this
that
was
one
the age
didn't.
of let's stretch things out. Let's make it as long
Well,
as Dr. Doolittle and such.
I kind of agree with you that like the brothers seem a little erroneous. I think we needed Rosemary just to see the other side of things and like to build up Cordy's confidence in dating and everything like that.
Yeah, but we also don't need a 10-minute scene before Are We Dancing, in which Cordy's talking to two boring guys from Yale and Harvard, and it leads to nowhere.
Oh yeah, we don't need that. But we do need Byumpa-pum because
I love Byung Pum Pum.
it is the make 'em laugh choreography that they have.
But the
That
jujitsu scene, that runs too long. Just get, like, we don't need boxing before we talk to, you know, there's just trims you could have done here and there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when they trimmed it, they cut the songs, keep the songs, but trim the scenes. And this film is just so, it's
I
just.
think you can definitely cut Watch Your Footwork. I'm sorry to say that, but like those two, because those two characters never show up again. At least Cordy has two scenes. Not
Yes.
Cordy, Rosemary. Rosemary has two scenes where we see her in the bedroom and then we see her at the
At the
party.
dance hall, yeah.
So we kind of need that. Unless you were to bring back the brothers at some point, which they didn't, but I guess they're not important to this specific story, but they still wanted to include them for historical reasons.
Yeah.
But anyway, is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
So I know on many podcasts that we have done together, many movies that we've done together, one of the questions we always get is, could this make a Broadway musical?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
What's
I
your,
was thinking that.
I mean, this is a Broadway musical. It has the length, but does it have, would this be interesting to a modern audience that's so used to, especially like if we're thinking about Disney and Broadway, again, where's the magic of Happiest Millionaire? At least with, you know, even Hunchback, there's the magic of the gargoyles. With Aida, there's, they make it up with costumes and grandeur, and you can't do that because it's fantasy Egypt.
Well, so like you've
This,
been.
how would you make this theatrical and interesting to a modern day audience that craves, you know, Moulin Rouge spectacle?
Well, like you've been comparing to the whole episode, this is My Fair Lady. So the magic is in the opulence, I feel like. You
Okay.
know, in the set design and the costuming. I mean, the male costumes are going to be boring no matter what you do because that's the time period. They are so boring. I'm not gonna lie. But the women with the gowns and dresses and hairstyles, so like you get a set like with Mrs. Duke's dress at the engagement party, like, oh my God, that is so over the top, but also so gorgeous.
Yeah. And I just had a thought that, you know, like when the Sherman Brothers did their musical adaptation of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, they put in cut songs and they wrote, you know, Kitty Kitty Vinkies for the stage adaptation. But since the Sherman Brothers are unfortunately passed, and I think this is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this movie when we talked about future episodes, I wanted to talk about this in honor of the recent Sherman Brothers pass. I believe it was Robert who recently passed. Or was it? No, it was Richard. Richard recently passed. So I wanted to do this episode in honor of him because it's my favorite score
Well,
of his.
there are 17 songs in the final version of the movie.
But if we wanted to add more, I was saying we could interlope songs from one and only original Genuine Family Band. You could, if you wanted to add in a song about, you know, the upper class versus, you know, New York versus Pennsylvania,
It would
you
be the
could
West Side
do
Story
position.
overture. You are correct.
Yeah, you could do like position and positioning from Slipper and the Rose to talk about what the time period was to make, you know, Anthony look more eccentric because he doesn't follow the norms of position and positioning.
But to answer your question, I do feel like that this would work because at least in this movie that we get, there's very little locations. It's very few locations.
And then would it
So
be like Peter Pan, in which we would have an actor play the crocodile?
alligator, get it right.
Alligator.
But maybe, I mean, unless you cut that, unfortunately, you probably would have to cut that scene because it won't translate well, I feel like, on stage than it would in the movie. Because in the movie, you can have live animals all the time, and you can have 12 live alligators. In the stage version, Obviously, you can't because that's very expensive, but also for the safety
Of the
issues
actors, yeah.
of actors and audience, of everyone involved. So, unless you make it an offstage bit where it's like, oh no, George escaped, let's go chase. And then you have like a tail, but not an actual animal. But yeah, I think this could be adapted. Why not?
Why not? What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? All right, let's get into Sharp and Flat, shall we?
I don't see anything that's wrong with that. What's wrong with that?
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it, I thought it could change, it's flat. I'm going to start with flats
Yeah, let's start with flat.
because, yes. My first flat is that Greer Garson is credited as mother. She has a fucking name. Give her the
Well,
name in the
also, Fred
credits.
McMurray is also credited as father, but I think by that point we all know it's Anthony
Well,
Mandel and Cordelia Drexel.
even on IMDb, he is credited as Anthony J. Drexel Biddle,
Oh, who
the
cares
father.
about IMDb? Who cares about that?
But she's only credited as mother everywhere across the board. And they say her name a bunch of times in the movie, so say Cordelia. Anyway, I'm also flatting the time jumps. It's just confused me a little bit because, like, they talked about sending Cordy to school, and then all of a sudden she was there. And I was like, okay. And like they use the newspapers as a help for a couple time passages, but I wish we saw dates or at least a month, you know, like give us months. Where are
Yes,
we?
I suppose.
I'm also flatting the toxic masculinity followed by the fragile male ego in this movie.
I don't think it's. I could see where that comes from a modern standpoint, but I think he
That's what
did
I'm
do. I think the
classifying.
actual character did do Bible Biddle classes and taught jujitsu to the Marines. So I don't think it's more. I don't think it's coming from a. That perspective, but I could see where you're what you're saying as well.
Yeah, especially when he fought, like he got so offended by the Marines, and I'm like, what did they say to you? Like, what, honestly, what did you think they were saying to you that you got so offended by them?
Think they were mentioning that he was like an old man, and then that was the point of that scene that he beat the young Marine doing boxing.
Yes, but you know your fucking age.
But he's an eccentric millionaire.
True. True. He has 12 alligators. I understand why she's like this, but I'm flatting Mrs. Duke because she was written to be such a malicious woman.
Well, that's why I love her. She's the villain of the piece. She's
She is the
great. And I think
villain
if
of the
you
piece.
hate her, then Geraldine Page did her job.
She did her job. I'm not flatting Geraldine Page. I'm flatting the character, Mrs. Duke. So I just want to clarify that because everyone in this job in this movie is doing their job. They're doing great. And my last flat is for Cordy's makeup when she breaks off the engagement. She looks so washed out and like a ghost that I was like, come on, Disney. You had all the money even in 1967. Somebody could have put like bronzer or something on her. Give her some makeup, please. But that was it for my flats, really. It was hard to hate this movie, I'm not gonna lie.
You know
And
what?
you know me, I like to go in and hate things, right?
Yeah. Oh, honey, I know.
What about you? What did you have flats?
You
I mean, you
know,
had flats.
I think you have persuaded me. I think the only reason I brought up about the length and some of the scenes is because that's what people have mentioned about, like, you know, when something does not work, they try to figure out, okay, what happened? But, you know, these scenes probably have about the same length in the same stretch of time as the scenes in Poppins, you know?
And Poppins is a long movie,
And
if you
Poppins
think.
is a long movie. I do not care in Mary Poppins about the run on the bank when the Revolutionary War happened, you know? So I will say, despite the length, I do enjoy this film. And I really don't mind the length because there's more for me to enjoy, you know? At least I'm getting the biggest bang for my buck. Now let's talk about flats. Let's think.
You didn't write anything down? How dare you?
Because I have more sharps than I do flats.
There we
And
go.
my original flat was
The
the
length.
length, but I'm gonna maybe give that a neutral.
Oh, you're gonna have a natural
Or,
of the
excuse me, a
length?
natural. It's not good, but it's not bad. Sometimes I like the length because there's more for me to enjoy. But sometimes I
It
don't like the
drags.
length because sometimes it drags.
Yeah. I could see that. I will agree with you on your natural
Yeah,
for the
that
for
I'm gonna
that.
give that a natural. I have no flats.
Whoa. Okay. Sharps then. I'm sharping Leslie Ann Warren because we have to. She is carrying this movie a lot.
And she does a fabulous job. Again, it's Leslie Ann Warren. What wrong can she do?
I know, right? I'm also sharping the choreography, even though, yes, they did borrow a lot from themselves in the past. It was still very fun
There's a
and
great moment in Fortuosity that is to the beat where he, I think Tommy Steele's like waving, and then a ball pops in his hat on the musical beat. Brilliant. Just brilliant timing there.
my favorite in the reprise is when they played it backwards so that it looked like the alligator was walking backwards with him.
Oh yeah, doing the kick line.
I'm like, there is no way you trained this alligator to go walk backwards. So.
Oh, I forgot to ask. Thank you for bringing that up. I don't know whether this is a flat or not. How did you feel about John Lawless sometimes breaking the fourth wall, talking to the camera, and then Frank McMurray comes in and is like, John, who are you talking to?
Oh, I laughed during that because I love meta moments like that.
Oh, you like
But
meta moments?
during Futurosity, it did, or Fortuosity, it did get a little like too much that he was speaking to the audience.
And you know what?
But
You reminded me. Thank you for bringing this up. In that, in Mary Poppins, Bert only breaks the fourth wall during the beginning. He never breaks, he kind of breaks the fourth wall. I think the only other time he breaks the fourth wall, and he says, hello, art lovers. But at least it's consistent with the fourth wall breaking. Actually, I think all of the fourth wall breaking stops after the first act,
in this
right?
movie,
Yeah, I think so. Unless.
as soon as Biddle like calls out the fact that he is talking to the camera or talking
Yeah,
outward,
I
that's
think
when it
that.
stops.
Yeah, I think that's when it stops.
Oh, wait, no,
Unless there's a
because
moment and let's have a drink on it.
I think there is a moment because he does. I think he when he's like not drinking, he kind of winks at the camera, but
I
without
think so.
winking.
But I'm glad that didn't bother you. Anyway, back to
It did.
sharps.
No, because it felt like he was like a narrator of sort, a magical narrator of sorts,
Like Bert.
like Bert. So sharp. I'm sh also sharpening Rosemary because we all need a Rosemary in our lives. I'm sharpening the scene where they're rounding up the alligators and into the reprise of Fortuosity. Colden, when I tell you I was laughing my ass off during this, I have no butt. I'm sitting on a donut right now. I'm leaning, actually, where I'm sitting.
I'm actually petrified of alligators. I'm petrified of alligators and rattlesnakes. Those are the two animals that scare me the most. That and lizards, like any sort of reptile,
Right, but
because.
I'm laughing at their reactions where they're just like, oh, you, because it feels like it's a they're dogs, right? Like
Yeah,
they treat them like dogs.
I suppose. I'm more on the maid side, like, get me out of here.
And what's her butt from Mary Poppins that's also in this movie? Ellen, that's right.
Ellen.
Where she's
Ellen.
just like, oh, you better not eat my food. And then she hits it with a broom and it bites the broom and she's just like, oh, how dare you get out of my kitchen? Like, that is hilarious to me. I laughed so loud that I think my neighbors are going to write me up or something. I am also sharpening the majority of the dresses. Okay, so at the dance, the dress that they gave Leslie Ann Warren felt like they were dressing her to be young, like very young.
It's
But
a very 60s dress compared to everyone that's in like hardcore, you know, My Fair Lady outfits.
right. And she also has 60s hair, but we're not gonna go into that world right now.
Well, I mean, everyone in My Fair Lady also had 60s hair.
Right, because they didn't understand period things at this point. But how old is she supposed to be? Is she supposed to be like 17, 18 years old?
Yeah, I think she's supposed to be young adult.
Because that dress made her look like if they also handed her an obnoxiously large lollipop, it would have worked.
I suppose.
Like it felt like they were trying to make her look younger than she is. And Leslie Ann Warren, like, is young at this point of her career, right? Hold up.
Yes, it was introducing her.
Yeah, she was almost 20, if not 20, when they made this movie. Yeah, she was born in 46, and this movie came out in 67. So she was 21 when this movie came out. So she is young. But I digress. But a lot of the dresses I did like. No wonder they were, that's what they were nominated for, the Oscar, for costume design, because it was beautiful to look at. And while I'm at it, I'm gonna sharp the set design too, because it did look very extravagant and over the top, what not being too much. But just enough that we know that they are obnoxiously wealthy, everyone in this movie.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna sharp the following songs: Valentine Candy and It Won't Be Long
Yes.
Till Christmas. I mean, all the songs are great, but those are the two I wanted to like highlight because it seems something different from this time period and Disney.
Yes.
So.
Valentine Candy is my second or third favorite Sherman Brothers song. I think my number one is Nobody's Problem. Nobody's Problems from Bedknobs and Broomsticks that was cut for time. I think my second is Tell 'Em Anything from Slipper and the Rose. And then third place is Valentine Candy.
Have
Note that they're
you
all sung by women and they're all ballads. You
you
know,
listened to Off the Rittenhouse Square? Th that
I
was the
have. That was a
it's a
cut
cut
song.
song.
That's on the soundtrack. And then I have this book called Disney's Lost Chords, which is a collection of sheet music. Collection of sheet music that was cut from Disney films, and there was another cut song, and it was a marching song for Anthony to sing. I think it was Up and Atom Boys. It was basically, come. It was a pastiche of, the war songs of World War One. Up and Atom Boys, time to go to war. All that good stuff. Cut for time, I think, probably.
Good, because we already have that with the other with Watch Your Footwork in a way.
Yeah. And I have a new appreciation after watching the film for this release for It Won't Be Long Till Christmas. When I first watched it, I was like, oh, yeah, I get why it was cut. But after understanding what the conflict was this time around, It Won't Be Long Till Christmas makes great sense. And the repetitiveness of let them go, let them go, let them go makes total sense.
What are your sharps?
I have so many because. Despite what I've said, this and I do I see I can see why it was a flop and is not well received. I still love this film. And it's one of those films I watch on sick days or days when I'm doing cleaning and I need a movie to put on. It's Happiest Millionaire. My first sharp will go to Peter Ellenshaw. Who is Peter Ellenshaw? He was a matte art painter. During this time, there was no CGI. You couldn't create, worlds. So, what Disney did was they had a painter, be behind a sheet of glass, or later they would record a scene and they would put the sheet of glass in later. And Peter Ellenshaw would have to draw lifelike replications of scenes. You'll see a lot of his work in Mary Poppins for. When Mary Poppins, Bert,
Like sitting on
Jane,
a
Michael
cat.
are walking across the skyline of London, that's all Peter Ellenshaw. When the lights go down in London and the sparkling lights come up in Mary Poppins, that's Peter Ellenshaw.
So when in this movie, when it's the external of the mansion that they
And a
live in.
lot of his, yes, that
Okay,
and
because I was
Detroit, the
like,
Detroit sequence, the bridge, that's not a real bridge. The forest, that's not a real force. That's all painted by hand. And it's glorious. Absolutely glorious. That scene where the snow's falling down on the house, matte painted. It's
wow.
gorgeous. And now, my favorite thing that he did was for the final sequence. It's in the credits. And it was the final shot they used for the edited release theatrical version. What he did, what is so beautiful. And but if we think about it from a modern world, we have to get like global warming out of our heads. But as you know, Ange's mission is to become a designer of cars, to go into the car business into and they, you know, during Detroit, they make fun of, oh, if only this car had a gramophone in it so you
I
could listen to
love
it.
that
And
she brought it up to the modern day for that time, for
yeah,
the
so
season.
just to make jokes about how far they've come in car technology, they make all these jokes like, oh, if only my car had a warmer in it and it could play songs. But at the end, there's this gorgeous shot of Cordy and Ange driving to Detroit, and it is my favorite. I
Send it to me.
love this so much. I'm going to show it to you right now. It
Oh, that is beautiful.
he was able to capture like a beautiful morning in Detroit that's full of possibilities and excitement, and it's on across this bridge
So
now.
the wait, that's
But
supposed
the
to
thing is that
be.
there's smokestacks and it's a factory town, and you know there's smoke going to the sky, so you got to
So
put the global warming thing. But somehow he was able to make the grittiness of, you know,
Detroit.
factory building a beautiful haven. That is incredible.
So that's supposed to be in the original
That
with
well, in
the.
the it's originally for the original intended release, and then in this restored version, it's part of the credits. But they
Got
took
it.
out this little section of film, and then after the jail sequence, you just see this shot of them driving to Detroit, and it just shows the end, a Walt Disney production.
Got it. Okay.
But this, and I'm sure you'll put this in your.
Send it to me, and
It's.
I will.
I'm trying to, and there's unfortunately there was no picture of it off of Google, so I had to screenshot it. But I mean, look, John, look how gorgeous that
I
is.
said it's beautiful.
I love it. Okay, let's keep on going.
Yeah, what are your other
Sharps.
sharps?
Although I have my favorite Dis, you know, Sherman Brothers songs, this is my favorite Sherman Brothers score. This is out of all of their scores. This is the one I play from the most, or that I love to listen to on vinyl. All these songs are just fantastic. Valentine Candy already being a standout for me. Another standout for me that I just think is perfect is the reprise of What's Wrong With That. Because the first and second time he sings those, and it's in a military march style of this is the life I lead. But then when he's in the car and Cordy says, they're not like us, Papa. And then Fred McMurray has the sweetest moment. When a man has a daughter,
That's
he's
actually the
always.
name of the song. That's it, they changed the title for that one moment. When a man has a daughter.
Yes, you're
But
right.
it's the same
You
you
you're right. You
but
are correct.
you but you are also correct in saying that it's the same, it's basically a reprise of what did you call it? What is it?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? But now it's like softer and it's more
Yeah, it's.
introspective. It's the one that they wrote for Les Mis. It's the same moment as well when he's in the carriage with,
Suddenly?
yes.
Well, I do not like suddenly.
But it's a
Suddenly you
similar
are.
moment where it's now that he's being fatherly towards
Yes.
his daughter
And I
for the
love
like
these
the first
lyrics.
time, really.
Yes. And I love these lyrics. I want her home where she's free of cares. I miss her footsteps on the stairs. What's wrong with that? How? It's such a beautiful, touching moment. And Are We Dancing is just glorious. And Let's Have a Drink on It and Fortuosity is so much fun. Ba-yum-pum-pum is a lot of fun as well. I love Detroit. I have half a mind one of these days. I wish I could bring that song into auditions because it's great in the male voice that Detroit. But it's a song about cars. But the Sherman Brothers are just so awesome. I love this score. That's definitely sharp. I think my last sharp is this cast. This is a great cast.
Yes.
Everyone is, like you said, is doing their job. But they're all wonderful. Gladys Cooper is being Gladys Cooper. She's playing the bitchy old lady who has all these great one-liners. Another pugilist, no doubt.
Yeah,
I'm here for the
Geraldine
mother's
Page is
position.
great.
Well, then announce me and take off your hat.
Greer Garson, Leslie
Greer
Ann Warren,
Garson.
no wonder she blew up after this.
Geraldine Page, John Davison, Tommy Steele, Fred McMurray, Ellen. They're all fantastic. And I think if there was any magic in this movie, it's them. It's
It's
the
the
cast.
cast. Yeah.
It's the cast that's magic.
You already kind of answered this, but would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist?
I already have two in my life's playlist, which is Valentine Candy and Detroit.
I agree with you with Valentine. I agree with you with both of them, and I'm going to add It Won't Be Long Till Christmas.
Let them go.
Because
Let them
it
go.
was a beautiful and kind of
It's a beautiful
heartbreaking
song.
song. Like, anyway, Colden, we did it. We done did it. We did the happiest millionaire.
And
Woo!
what's wrong with that?
What do you have to plug or promote?
I don't have anything at the present time. I'm still plugging away. I have been adding things to the Mark Blitzstein Archive, which is a YouTube channel that I've created to promote the work of Mark Blitzstein. Couple of videos have been put out, and I'm thinking about putting a couple up. Hopefully, by the time this podcast has been released,
That was Street Scene. He was Street Scene.
Mark Blitzstein was Cradle Will Rock.
Cradle of Rock. But what did we didn't do anything of his.
Oh my gosh, we did it! We did a whole episode where you didn't mention German Amphitheater. Ha! We did it! I
No,
win!
but like we didn't do a Mark Blitzstein.
No, you did with Mark Benani. You
I
did
did with
Cradle of
Mark,
Rock with Mark
yes.
Benani. Hi, Mark Benani. I'm still a big fan of yours.
But okay, I was just making sure because I know you've been plugging that a couple with the last few episodes. I wasn't sure though if we did something together because I've done so many.
And I'm grateful. I love being on this podcast. I
Yeah,
don't
no,
like the sound of music live, but I love being on this podcast.
but I'm forgetful of things. So literally, we will end the Zoom call and I will forget everything we talked about until I re-edit it. And so, and if you, the listener, want to talk more about The Happiest Millionaire, did we forget something? Was there some historical fact that we didn't mention that would answer a lot of our questions? You can reach out to me. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com, also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Threads at buttersongpod. Is this okay? So Colden has said that this is his favorite Sherman Brothers music. Do you agree? Do you have an opinion about other ones that we've done? Have we not done a Sherman Brothers musical movie that you're like, where is this?
Have you done Charlotte's Web?
No.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
I think otherwise, I think you got the main ones.
And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, we will be discussing a 2024 documentary called Adrian and the Castle. And everyone, thank you for listening and bye for now.
Special thanks to Aaron Choi for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.